Fluoridated water. How safe is drinking water? Controversy over the addition of the chemical sodium fluoride to municipal drinking water supplies has raged since the early 1950s. It was a time when Nazi scientists were being settled within the United States under the auspices of Project Paperclip. The Reader's Digest Oxford Complete Word Finder defines fluoride merely as any binary compound of fluorine. But fluorine was defined as a poisonous pale yellow gaseous element of the halogen group. Charles Elliot Perkins, a prominent U.S. industrial chemist, was sent by the U.S. government to help reconstruct the IG Farben chemical plants in Germany at the end of the war. In 1954, he wrote a letter to the Lee Foundation for Nutritional Research, stating that he had learned that the Nazi regime had used sodium fluoride as a means of mass control. "I want to make this very definite and very positive," Perkins wrote. "The real reason behind water fluoridation is not to benefit children's teeth. The real purpose behind water fluoridation is to reduce the resistance of the masses to domination and control and loss of liberty. Repeated doses of infinitesimal amounts of fluorine will in time gradually reduce the individual's power to resist domination by slowly poisoning and narcotizing this area of the brain tissue, and make him submissive to the will of those who wish to govern him. I say this with all the earnestness and sincerity of a scientist who has spent nearly 20 years research into the chemistry, biochemistry, physiology, and pathology of fluorine. Any person who drinks artificially fluoridated water for a period of 1 year or more will never again be the same person, mentally or physically. Most people do not realize that fluoride is a key ingredient in Prozac and many other psychotropic drugs. Prozac, whose scientific name is fluoxetine, is 94% fluoride. Though fluoride purportedly prevents tooth decay, it only has been shown to affect tooth decay in children under 12. Today, two-thirds of all municipal water and most bottled water in the United States contain sodium fluoride. Fluoride is a poisonous waste product of aluminum manufacture that accumulates in the human body. The use of aluminum cookware has been strongly linked to Alzheimer's disease, a progressive brain disorder that gradually destroys a person's memory and ability to learn, reason, and make judgments. A Christian Science Monitor survey in 1954 showed that 79 of the 81 Nobel Prize winners in chemistry, medicine, and physiology refused to endorse water fluoridation. Nevertheless, every U.S. Public Health Service Surgeon General since the 1950s has supported putting this rat poison ingredient into America's water supply. The experts cannot decide where the truth lies in the fluoride controversy. Virginia dental surgeon and nutritionist Dr. Ted Spencer wrote, "A few years ago, I was asked by the head of our local health department to conduct a review of existing journal research on the toxicity of fluoride, with emphasis on its cancer-causing potential. I went to the National Medical Library and produced for him some 40 articles on the toxicity of fluoride. When we reviewed them, there was some discrepancy in whether or not fluoride was mutagenic. Half of the articles said that it was, and half said that it was not. But it cannot be both ways. We wondered what was wrong." Spencer discovered that fluoride has been banned in European nations such as Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Germany, Italy, Belgium, Austria, France, and the Netherlands. It is especially interesting to note that West Germany banned the use of fluorides in 1971, a time when it was still heavily occupied by Allied soldiers. Apparently, they could no longer silence the German scientists who had proved that fluoridation is a deadly threat to the population, wrote Eustace Mullins, a former Library of Congress staffer and World War II veteran who wrote numerous books on conspiracy topics, including medicine, finance, and politics. Despite Europe's bans, America continues to pursue fluoridating all water supplies and ignoring studies like those of Dr. Dean Burke, the chief chemist emeritus of the U.S. National Cancer Institute. Burke stated, "In point of fact, fluoride causes more human cancer death and causes it faster than any other chemical." Dr. Perry Cohn of the New Jersey Department of Health discovered a correlation between osteosarcoma, a principal childhood cancer, and fluoridation. After creating a 2005 survey in seven New Jersey counties, Cohn found the incidence of osteosarcoma in boys under the age of 10 was 4.6 times higher in fluoridated areas than in non-fluoridated areas. The incidence of cancer was 3.5 times higher in the 10 to 19 age group and over twice as high in the 20 to 49 age group. Studies indicate that every major city using fluoridated water has experienced an increase in the rates of cancer. "Not a fair trade for good-looking teeth," commented Dr. Spencer, adding, "All allopathically trained dentists are very familiar with the ADA, American Dental Association, and other authoritative positions on fluoride. They rarely mention its toxic potential or the few studies revealing increased tooth decay after fluoride use." Spencer also referred to studies that suggest fluoride causes unscheduled DNA synthesis, sister chromatid exchanges, and mutagenic effects on cells. These terms may not bother some people at all, but they mean that there will be an increase in cancer after the ingestion of fluoride, Spencer wrote. Although each person must decide for themselves the dangers of fluoride, Spencer did point to several studies with convoluted titles that conjure images of grotesque science experiments. Sodium fluoride induced chromosome aberrations in different stages of the cell cycle. Chronic administration of aluminum fluoride or sodium fluoride to rats in drinking water, alterations in neuronal and cerebrovascular integrity, and toxin-induced blood vessel inclusions caused by the chronic administration of aluminum and sodium fluoride and their implications in dementia. Given the massive amounts of money being paid by the pharmaceutical corporations to the corporate mass media, it is highly doubtful that many Americans will learn of the results of these studies anytime soon. The entire history of fluoride in America is one of deceit and conspiracy. In 1946, a Wall Street attorney and former counsel to the Aluminum Company of America, now known by the acronym Alcoa, named Oscar Ewing, was appointed by President Truman to head the Federal Security Agency. Ewing became in charge of not only the U.S. Public Health Service, but also the Social Security Administration and the Office of Education. Congressman A.L. Miller, a physician-turned-Republican politician, accused Ewing of being placed in a highly paid position by Alcoa, a Rockefeller syndicate, to promote fluoridation. Miller stated, "The chief supporter of the fluoridation of water is the U.S. Public Health Service. This is part of Mr. Ewing's Federal Security Agency. Mr. Ewing is one of the highly paid lawyers for the Aluminum Company of America." Other opponents were less kind. Leaflets handed out in New York City boldly stated, "Rockefeller agents order fluoride rat poisoning of nation's water. Water fluoridation is the most important aspect of the Cold War that is being waged on us, chemically, from within, by the Rockefeller-Soviet axis. It serves to blunt the intelligence of a people in a manner that no other dope can. Also, it is genocidal in two manners. It causes chemical castration and it causes cancer, thus killing off older folks. This committee, Ewing's study of fluoride, did no research or investigation on the poisonous effects of water fluoridation. They accepted the falsified data published by the USPHS, U.S. Public Health Service, on the order of boss Oscar Ewing, who had been rewarded with $750,000 by fluoride waste producer Aluminum Company. Suspiciously, it was also reported that Ewing told fellow senators not to drink fluoridated water. Healthcare blues. If the nightmares of natural health advocates come to pass, a sick person soon will have no recourse but to seek professional medical assistance, which may not exist according to recent reports. This nation's healthcare system is in a shambles. Healthcare costs are moving beyond 16% of gross domestic product, and the U.S. healthcare system is sometimes 100% more expensive than anywhere else. Yet Americans do not live as long as citizens in other nations. Every citizen in these countries is covered by a health care plan, whereas in America, 15% of the population, about 47 million people, are uncovered at any given time. 50% of bankruptcies in the United States are due to medical bills, and many workers avoid changing jobs for fear of losing medical coverage, especially when they have pre-existing conditions. Many factors contribute to the poor state of healthcare in America, including malpractice anxiety for physicians, which leads to defensive practice. Also at play is the lack of coverage for preventative and mental health care, which could serve as a prophylactic for expensive emergency care later on. More troubling is the profiteering of insurance and drug companies, a system that rewards physicians for overprescribing drugs. In her book, Overtreated: Why Too Much Medicine is Making Us Sicker and Poorer, Shannon Brownlee explains that a serious part of the healthcare issue is the lack of clinical research needed to guide physicians' decisions. According to Brownlee, up to 80% of health decisions involve ambiguity, the variability of diagnosis and available treatments, which leads to unnecessary treatments and costs. But don't blame the doctors for the failures of the American health industry. In 2009, the Wall Street Journal reported that an increasing number of doctors, including specialists, were either opting out of Medicare entirely or not accepting patients with Medicare coverage, blaming low reimbursement rates and complaining that the burden of bureaucratic paperwork was not worth the effort. Dr. Michael E. Truman, a Texas family physician in practice for nearly 40 years, explained, "Over the past several years, I've noticed that reimbursements for services I provide are being cut or staying the same while the cost of business has escalated a great deal. Current reimbursements for Medicare are 35% below what most other insurance carriers pay. I have no idea what they're going to do this year, but if rates are lowered 25%, most doctors will start limiting the number of Medicare patients they see because reimbursement is below their cost for doing business. I haven't seen anything in the new health proposals that will remedy this problem." Truman said most large insurance companies refuse to increase reimbursements to match inflation. "We have very little to say about it except not to see their patients, and that means closing our office," he said. With decreasing reimbursement, doctors will be forced to start seeing 40 to 50 patients a day, which means the patients will pay the price. They will get about 5 minutes of the doctor's time. With so little time with the patient, the doctors will be ordering more tests to cover their ass and turning care over to their nurse practitioners. "When I went into practice in 1972, we didn't have any PPOs or HMOs. No one stood at our front door and collected part of our fee before the patient ever got in the office. We now have to subsidize big salaries for the insurance CEOs and who knows who else. They are getting rich off every doctor in practice today, and insurance premiums are going up every year to the point that many of my patients can't afford their insurance anymore, and they are now paying cash. Most of the insurance companies today are nothing but parasites, offering no vitality to medical care, just sapping whatever life is left out of it." With more and more doctors dropping out of insurance plans, soon there is no guarantee that you will be able to see a physician no matter what coverage you have, said Mark Siegel, an internist and an associate professor of medicine at the NYU Langone Medical Center. "Of course, we're promised by the Obama administration that universal health care insurance will avoid all these problems. But how is that possible when you consider that the medical turnstiles will be the same as they are now, only they will be clogged with more and more patients? The doctors will be even more overwhelmed." Deserting doctors may be the least of the healthcare problems facing a zombie nation. Analysts estimate that the Obama administration's proposed universal healthcare program may cost upward of $2 trillion over a 10-year period. There is difficulty in even funding existing programs. In a 2009 article for FrontPageMag.com, Mackinac Center for Public Policy Associate Tate Trussell warned that "we are totally unprepared fiscally even for existing programs. neither Social Security nor Medicare is ready for the onslaught of the 78 million Americans who will stop paying into retirement programs and who instead will begin to draw on benefits government has promised them. The first line of baby boomers began signing up for early retirement under Social Security last year, in 2008. Soon the 78 million person tsunami of seniors will expect to be covered by Medicare. But just like the FDIC and Social Security, there is no stockpile of funds to fulfill government promises of health care. Payroll taxes supplying trust funds for these programs already are inadequate. According to the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, the Obama budget plan will increase federal spending 25% faster than revenues during the next 10 years. Incredibly, this is almost modest dollar-wise compared to the current unfunded liability for Social Security and Medicare, noted Trussell. It totals $101.7 trillion in today's dollars. This is more than seven times the 2008 gross domestic product, or GDP, our total economy, according to calculations by the National Center for Policy Analysis. These enormous figures to fund Social Security and Medicare seem too huge to even want to be acknowledged by some policymakers. In February 2009, John C. Goodman, president of the Dallas-based National Center for Policy Analysis, outlined the coming costs for government programs. In 2012, Social Security and Medicare will need one out of every 10 general income tax dollars to make up for their combined deficits. By 2020, the federal government will need one out of every 4 income tax dollars to pay for these programs. By 2030, the midpoint of the baby boomer retirement years, it will require one of every 2 income tax dollars. So it is clear that the federal government will be forced either to scale back everything else it's doing in a drastic way or raise taxes dramatically. Goodman added, if healthcare consumers are allowed to save and spend their own money, and if doctors are allowed to act like entrepreneurs, if we allow the market to work, there is every reason to believe that healthcare costs can be prevented from rising faster than our incomes. Otherwise, prepare for the tax tsunami. Is it possible that the globalists foresee this looming tax tsunami only too well and are siphoning every dime out of the U.S. economy before it hits? Such calamity could provide the very excuse they need to gain total control of not only the U.S. economy, but also the economies of the nations who support the U.S. dollar. Over and above the stretched thin healthcare industry and approaching financial chaos, even more medical horrors loom on the horizon. The Mycoplasma Attack. The victims of the neurodegenerative/systemic degenerative disease, myalgic encephalomyelitis/fibromyalgia, are ill with a very real physical disease deriving from a subviral particle developed from the brucellosis bacterial toxin. Donald W. and William L. C. Scott, authors of The Brucellosis Triangle. In recent horror movies, tiny microorganisms infect humans and turn them into flesh-eating zombies. Often, the virus has been accidentally loosed from a covert government laboratory. Although it doesn't seem like a pathogen exists for transforming a normal person into a cannibalistic zombie, there are a number of man-made germs and toxins that have been in development since before World War II that can devastate the human body. Nazi and Japanese biological warfare. In the wake of World War II, thousands of die-hard Nazis were arriving in the United States thanks to a technology for immunity swap arranged between Hitler's right-hand man, Martin Bormann, and America's Wall Street elite, which included John J. McCloy and his protege, Alan Dulles. According to Dr. Len G. Horowitz's research, the WHO, World Health Organization, was heavily funded and influenced by the Rockefeller family, along with the United Nations and the World Bank, and the fact that John D. Rockefeller's business managers and lawyers, John Foster and Alan Dulles, had created the partnership between the world's largest oil conglomerate and IG Farben, Germany's leading industrial organization prior to World War II. Before the war, attorney McCloy had represented the IG Farben drug combine. In The Rise of the Fourth Reich, it was detailed how the Dulles brothers and their pre-war work for Schroeder, Rockefeller & Company, City National Bank Chairman John J. McCloy, and Union Banking Corporation Director Prescott Bush acted as principal agents for Hitler's Germany. It might also be noted that the UN building in New York City sits on Rockefeller-donated land. McCloy, who served as High Commissioner in post-war Germany, also was chairman of the Ford Foundation, Chase Manhattan Bank, the Salk Institute, E.R. Squibb and Sons, and the powerful Council on Foreign Relations. Described in the New York Times as a group that fixes major goals and constitutes itself a ready pool of manpower for the more exacting labors of leadership. In his 1989 Times obituary, McCloy was termed Chairman of the Establishment. Though U.S. laws were in place to forbid post-war Germans from conducting research on chemical warfare, these were largely ignored as John McCloy hired experts as consultants and helped fund German industries to produce chemical warfare materials for the American military. At the same time, Alan Dulles was named director of the CIA. Prior to the war, he had served as legal representative of the Nazi Schroeder Bank and then during the war as an officer for the Office of Strategic Services, or OSS, where he supervised Army intelligence translator Henry Kissinger, who would go on to become Secretary of State under President Richard Nixon. It was Dulles, as head of the CIA, who expunged many paperclip scientists' Nazi backgrounds. During this time, Wernher von Braun, long considered the father of our NASA space program, and other top rocket scientists entered the country, along with Walter Emil Schreiber, the chief of Nazi medical science who had supervised the sterilization of men using surgery, X-rays, and drugs, and had overseen the exchange of humans and mice as recipients of a deadly typhus virus. Despite being described as the prototype of an ardent and convinced Nazi, Schreiber worked for a decade in the chemical division of the U.S. European Command and for a time at the Air Force School of Aviation Medicine in Texas. Another German immigrant, Kurt Blom, told U.S. military interrogators in 1945 that he had been ordered in 1943 to experiment with plague vaccines on concentration camp prisoners. Blom went on to work for the U.S. Army Chemical Corps. These Nazis were joined at Fort Detrick by Japanese General Ishii Shiro, the man in charge of the infamous Unit 731, the Japanese Biological Research and Development Unit, responsible for the deaths of 3,000 people, including American prisoners. It was the work of such enemy researchers that was continued and expanded in the United States following World War II, that may have resulted in many recent health disasters. Mycoplasmas and prions. In the early 1940s, Nazi medical scientists had managed to isolate the bacterial toxin from Brucella bacteria, usually known as brucellosis or undulate fever and mostly found in mammals, especially cows, and form it into a crystalline form or agent. Brucellosis is an ancient bacteria and was selected because it was insidious, very difficult to detect, and present in almost every organ or system of the human body. When activated by the crystalline agent, brucellosis stimulates various diseases that prompt a variety of symptoms, including debilitating fatigue, high fever, shivering, aching, drenching sweats, headache, backache, weakness, and depression. Damage to major organs is possible, leading to ailments such as multiple sclerosis, arthritis, and heart disease. The paperclip medical scientists coming to America brought with them this toxin, known as mycoplasma, a distinct type of bacteria lacking a cell wall. A U.S. government report dated January 3, 1946, carried a section entitled Production and Isolation for the First Time of a Crystalline Bacterial Toxin. The Nazi bug had been reduced to a crystalline form, creating an artificial virulent disease agent derived from the original bacteria. This crystalline bacterial agent could be dispensed by aerial spraying or by infected insects. The agent also did not respond to most antibiotics, including penicillin. Acting as a parasite, it stimulated both bacterial and viral diseases, and because it attached to specific cells without killing them, was virtually undetectable by conventional medical diagnosis techniques. Such diseases are considered untreatable and usually fatal because they mostly affect the brain or neural tissue. These subviral bacterium particles have various names. They have been termed prions by Nobel Prize winner Dr. Stanley B. Prusiner, stealth viruses by Dr. John Martin of the Center for Complex Infectious Diseases, amyloids by the late Dr. Carlson Gajdusek, winner of the 1976 Nobel Prize in Medicine for his work on mysterious epidemics at the National Institutes of Health, NIH, and mycoplasma/brucellosis by Donald Scott and Garth Nicholson. According to a paper by Stanley Prusiner, prions are unprecedented infectious pathogens that cause fatal neurodegenerative diseases by the entirely novel mechanism of altering proteins in the body. Prion diseases may present as genetic, infectious, or sporadic disorders, all of which involve modification of the prion protein, or PRP, wrote Prusiner. Paperclip scientists working on these infectious organisms were based primarily in laboratories at Fort Detrick, Maryland, Cold Spring Harbor, New York, and Edgewood Arsenal, Maryland. It was here and in hundreds of other laboratories throughout America that immediately after World War II, our former enemy's scientists were brought in under Operation Paperclip to continue their research and development of some of the most horrible weapons of mass destruction known to mankind, noted molecular researchers Garth and Nancy Nicholson in their 2005 book, Project Daylily. The husband and wife molecular researchers noted that there are 200 species of mycoplasma. Most are innocuous and do no harm. Only 4 or 5 are pathogenic. Mycoplasma fermentans incognitus strain probably comes from the nucleus of the Brucella bacterium. This disease agent is not a bacterium and not a virus. It is a mutated form of the Brucella bacterium, combined with a Vizsna virus, from which the mycoplasma is extracted, they said. The little mycoplasma also lost some of its genetic information, such as the genes that encode the thick cell wall and other genes that code for certain enzymes and metabolic pathways. Thus, it is smaller than the most common bacteria, and without the distinctive cell walls found in most bacteria, it can take on a variety of morphologies. It must hide inside animal or human cells to survive, and although originally thought to be fairly fragile, the little mycoplasma was hardier than anyone had ever imagined. Although considered primitive by bacteriological standards, the mycoplasma actually evolved from bacteria that contained cell walls but lost its ability to make its own cell wall, probably because it no longer needed it when hiding inside host cells and tissues. But it made up for the loss of some of its genetic information by having evolved with other genetic sequences that allowed it to enter and colonize cells just like viruses. But it was not a virus because it retained the genetic and biochemical remnants of bacteria. Like a virus, however, it damaged cells by interfering with some of the cell's biochemical cycles, and it encoded some nasty molecules that caused invaded cells to slowly self-destruct and die, said the Nicholsons, noting that important targets inside cells were the mitochondria, cellular batteries that produce energy, and the DNA. The Nicholsons explained that biological warfare research conducted between 1942 and now has created more deadly and infectious forms of mycoplasma. Continuing the work of Nazi scientists, researchers in the United States weaponized the mycoplasma by reducing the pathogen to a synthesized crystalline form. They later tested it on an unsuspecting public in North America. According to the Nicholsons, the U.S. military's fascination with building this kind of biological weapon lies in the fact that the creature will hide inside cells and cause unbelievable havoc. It will destroy the mitochondria, eventually sending cells into an unrelenting death program, and in the process, gene expression will go crazy and surrounding cells will become damaged. This bug will then escape from its dying host cell to go to other places to eventually colonize every organ. And because pieces of the cellular membrane are dislodged when this little mycoplasma leaves its cellular hiding places, its victims should also be presented with an array of autoimmune symptoms similar to those found in various degenerative illnesses. It may even mimic some neurodegenerative diseases. It's beautiful because it should cause diseases such as multiple sclerosis and rheumatoid arthritis, but no one will ever guess that they are caused by an infection. Most physicians will never figure this out. What a delightful weapon. Several researchers, including the Nicholsons, Dr. Leonard G. Horowitz, Dr. Joseph S. Puleo, and the authors of the Brucellosis Triangle, Donald W. and William L. C. Scott, have linked this mycoplasma pathogen to a host of increasingly common neurosystemic diseases such as Alzheimer's, bipolar disorder, Crohn's colitis, chronic fatigue syndrome, Creutzfeldt-Jakob, diabetes, dystonia, fibromyalgia, Huntington's, lupus, Lyme disease, multiple sclerosis, myalgic encephalomyelitis, Parkinson's disease, and even schizophrenia. Some strains of mycoplasma are now being blamed for cancer and AIDS. According to the former chief virologist for the pharmaceutical company Merck Sharp & Dohme, the late Dr. Maurice Heilman, this disease agent is now carried by everybody in North America and possibly most people throughout the world. Mycoplasma researchers claim many people today suffering from various neurological diseases are actually ill with brucellosis. However, because the disease toxin pathogen has been isolated from the source bacterium in a crystalline form, there is no blood or tissue test that will confirm this fact. Weaponized mycoplasmas generate ammonias that are deposited into the infected cell nuclei. These nasty beasts intertwine with the genetic machinery and are intracellular rather than intercellular. Other infectious agents are involved in the afflicted individual. These agents are usually mosaics of naturally occurring bacteria and viruses, and the effect upon the afflicted individual depends upon the individual's genetic predisposition and immunological makeup, stated Garth Nicholson. Each person is affected differently by the infection, but all afflicted individuals share a constellation of symptoms. We have a survey that describes 120 signs and symptoms, added Nancy Nicholson. In the case of the pathogenic mycoplasmas that we investigated, we found the HIV-1 envelope gene associated with a mycoplasma. This gene renders the mycoplasma more deadly. I've always wondered how many people that have been diagnosed as HIV positive actually have the chimeric, a mosaic of the mycoplasma bacteria and HIV. Reportedly, there are 10 strains of HIV. HIV-1 promotes AIDS by compromising the immunization system, whereas HIV-2 does not promote AIDS. The other 8 HIV strains are included in the biowarfare arsenal. The pathogenic mycoplasma can promote a non-HIV AIDS that mimics the symptoms of AIDS. No one will talk about this, said Nancy Nicholson. The mycoplasmas have been genetically engineered with pieces of genetic material from other pathogens, such as Brucella. The mycoplasmas are often cofactors with the Lyme disease microorganism. All these emerging diseases correlate to biowarfare experiments conducted during the Cold War that went seriously awry. Remember, the U.S. did approximately 208 open-air tests on the U.S. population without their knowledge or consent over a 30-year period. It is possible that the crystalline disease toxin from the pathogens is one of the mycoplasma species, a technological feat accomplished by U.S. military biochemical researchers working with Nazi paperclip scientists. In 1946, the director of the War Research Service, George W. Merck, reported the possibility of using crystalline toxins to Secretary of War Robert P. Patterson. It should be noted that the War Research Service initiated America's biological weapons program, and Merck went on to become president of the Merck & Company pharmaceutical firm. Although Merck died in 1957, his early knowledge of the disease toxin means it could have been passed along to his colleagues at Merck Pharmaceutical. That Merck was involved in such research can be seen in a New England Journal of Medicine article that noted that a study of the hepatitis B vaccine, used extensively in gay and drug addict communities, was supported by a grant from the Department of Virus and Cell Biology of Merck, Sharp, and Dohme Research Laboratories, West Point, Virginia. After extensive study, researchers Donald W. and William L. C. Scott concluded that those suffering from chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia are actually victims of man-altered versions of brucellosis emanating from the Triangle, that is, the areas around Fort Detrick, Washington, D.C., New York City's East Side and Long Island's Federal Animal Disease Center, and Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory. These locations are often mentioned in biological warfare literature. Fort Detrick and Cold Spring Harbor, especially, were centers of Nazi paperclip research activity. According to the Scott's report, this pathogen was tested during the summer of 1984 at Tahoe Truckee High School in California via the air duct system. Individual rooms were fitted with an independent recycling air supply system, and the teacher's lounge was designated as the infection target. Within months, 7 of 8 teachers assigned to this room became very ill. Tahoe Truckee High School was only one of several locations where the specially designed pathogens were tested. Some pathogens were distributed by aerosol sprays, and others were spread through contaminated mosquitoes. The Scots reported that during the 1980s, 100 million mosquitoes a month were bred at the Dominion Parasite Laboratory in Belleville, Ontario. From there, the mosquitoes were tested by both Canadian and U.S. military authorities after being infected with brucellosis. Some observers believe the 1999 outbreak of human encephalitis in New York City, due to what was designated West Nile virus, may have been the result of these infected mosquitoes. Additionally, the Scots also claim that unsuspecting victims were tested by both the military and CIA and monitored by the National Institutes of Health and Centers for Disease Control. Encouraged by what they thought was a successful test, military leaders reportedly passed the brucellosis bioagent to Saddam Hussein, who in the mid-1980s was fighting a protracted war against Iran with the aid of the CIA. With the approval of Vice President George H.W. Bush in 1985, Saddam received a startling array of biological pathogens, the essential raw material for a disabling weapon. This included shipments of both Brucella abortus, biotypes 3 and 9, and Brucella melitensis, biotypes 1 and 3. These toxins continued to be sold to Saddam through May 2, 1986, as shipments number 21 and 22 from the American Type Culture Collection, ATCC, in Rockville, Maryland. In a 2005 article entitled Molecular Terrorism, Gary Tunsky credited both the Scots and the Nicholsons with creating a growing public awareness of the mysterious and debilitating effects of mycoplasma infection. Chances are, if you feel sick and tired and your doctor is unable to make a definite diagnosis because lab tests, blood chemistry profiles, and tissue cultures fail to reveal any disease pathogen, you might very well be infected with mycoplasma. suggested Tonski. Since mycoplasma cannot be successfully treated with the usual short course duration of antibiotics due to their intracellular location, slow proliferation rate, and inherent resistance to most antibiotics, the few mycoplasma experts that specialize in this field are recommending 6 months to 1 year of nonstop treatments using strong antibiotics such as Cipro and doxycycline, he added. However, if a patient does not want to destroy their body and immune system with Cipro and doxycycline, a total overhaul of every cell from head to toe using a multifaceted, non-toxic, holistic treatment approach is absolutely necessary to overcome mycoplasma infections naturally. This is why vitamins and nutritional supplementation are so important in the therapy. Tonski said the reason so many Americans are caught up in a medical merry-go-round of being bounced from one doctor to the next without ever receiving a proper diagnosis is that mainstream medical doctors are not trained to find hard-to-detect pathogens. Since mycoplasma hides intracellularly and invades multiple organs and systems, it manifests a vast array of symptoms throughout the whole body, making a correct diagnosis virtually impossible for a mainstream doctor's linear magic bullet mentality, he explained. Such inability to make a quick and simple diagnosis lies behind the mysterious malady that struck members of the U.S. military in the Persian Gulf War of 1990-91.